Get ready for a week-long celebration of music, community, and fabulous fun with Joy Radiothon 2024. Joy has the largest collection of rainbow podcast content in the world, and you can help keep us out loud and proud by donating during Joy Radiothon 2024. Just go to joy.org.au/radiothon. Mark it in your calendars because Joy Radiothon returns June 1st to 7th. And remember, we all flourish with joy.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycast.
Joy 94.9 presents Absolutely Everybody. Sponsored by and presented by Anecto, the People Network. Absolutely Everybody, only on Joy 94.9.
You're on Joy 94.9, it's 4 minutes past midday, you're with Amy today, and it's Absolutely Everybody time. And we have a great show ahead of us today. We have the lovely Zoe back with us.
Hey.
And Mark is panelling because he's awesome and doesn't want to let me near the buttons because that wouldn't be a good idea. Nope. And we also have today the fabulous Steph.
Hello.
And Verena.
Hi, hi.
Who will be talking all things social inclusion, bit of gadgety talk, and a bit of talk about the Safe Schools Symposium that Steph fabulously organised on Friday, and I was lucky enough to attend for the whole day. So we've got a great show ahead of us. Please text in and let us know what you think on 0427JOY949 or email us onair@joy.org.au and say g'day. Next up, we have a song, Saved in a Bottle by the Potbellies. Enjoy.
Absolutely Everybody, a show for Absolutely Everybody on Joy 94.9.
You're on Joy 94.9. It's 9 minutes past midday. You're with Amy, Zoe, Raina and Steph.
Wow, it's an all-girl lineup today you've got there, Amy.
It's fabulous today.
Woohoo! I think you might have organised that.
I think I subconsciously did. I didn't do it consciously, but yay! Girl time! Sorry, Mark.
Sure is.
So yes, we're going to have a chat now with Raina about some stuff that's going on around social inclusion and all that.
Yeah.
What have you bought for us today to have?
Well, all kinds of things, I've got to say. So actually, let's confess. So Amy's like, do you want to come on the show and talk about gadgets? And I'm like, sure. The thing is, I personally love my gadgets and stuff, but I don't always think about where they fit into my life. Do you know what I mean? I don't really get super analytical about it. But we were talking before the show a little bit about, you know, sometimes it's a little tricky to use a desktop computer for some of us for a bunch of different reasons, like maybe just not confident or whatever. And so I did what I, you know, my superpower is my library card. So yes, I took myself down to the library and I did some amazing reading up on social inclusion in the internet.
Mm. Ah.
And how people maybe don't connect as well as they could some of the time to things. But in a lot of other ways, the internet can be such an amazing tool for social connection that maybe not everybody has had access to before.
Mm.
So I guess there's loads of great things to talk about there.
What'd you find?
What did I find? So there's a lot of work going on, for example, about understanding how people who are homeless or maybe have, you know, not so regular access to a place to stay, even if they're not, you know, don't identify as homeless, and how they connect to the internet. And often what happens is, you know, when you have conversations with people about this, they're like, oh, so-and-so's got a mobile phone, obviously things not that rough, which is a really horrible and judgmental thing to say, I think.
Yeah, that's fairly short-sighted, I would think.
It is, and it turns out that it's actually more the norm than not. So if you don't have a permanent place of residence and you aren't getting a internet connection to wherever it is that you're staying, maybe you're boarding or couch surfing or whatever it is that you're doing, your mobile phone is possibly the only way that you get internet access.
Yep.
And for me, as someone who builds things for the web, it's kind of interesting because we often go, oh, well, yeah, most of our viewers have got a desktop computer and they've got broadband and blah, 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 which is not always the case.
Yeah.
So you might not be using a desktop computer. You might be using a laptop that, you know, like a recycled or a laptop. You might be using a new one or whatever, but using it on 4G. You might just be using your phone. A lot of people only ever use their phone.
Yeah,
they don't even go to the library.
Tablet.
Yeah, using a tablet.
Or using, you know, especially for older people, they often get the hand-me-down technology from grandkids or daughters or sons or family members, but then people don't actually take the time to assist them in how to use it. So they only get a certain level of functionality, and then they feel like they're out of the loop because they might not know how to Skype.
That's right.
Their granddaughter who's backpacking around Cambodia or wherever, you know.
That's why you have grandkids, isn't it? Is so that you
so they can program
actually,
the VCR.
Program the VCR and show you how to use
Pretty
your
much,
Skype.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. You know, and a lot of older people now are trying to be more proactive. And then you get people like my dad, who he's proactive on the computer, but he refuses to get a mobile phone.
Really?
Wow.
He doesn't have one.
That's so unusual for today.
You can't get in touch with him. But then I've got other family friends who've got mobile phones, but they don't know how to use them, or they never turn them on.
Yeah.
So there
is
still a gap.
Yeah, digital divide. Yeah.
Who use all that technology, and those who don't. And I think it's really interesting because, you know, for instance, I was having a discussion the other day with someone about the fact that to do a tax return now is all online.
Yeah.
That doesn't seem fair to me.
It's an assumption, isn't it, that everyone has access.
It's an assumption that everyone is able to go to a computer and do it. I'm not sure I'd want to sit in a public library and do my tax return.
That's a good point, actually, around your privacy and where you can, get it done privately.
Because especially if it's, you know, you do it all and then it deletes it. That sort of thing happens.
Privacy is such a thing that if you live at home, you have your own internet connection, even if you live with people, you generally have this expectation that sooner or later you'll be able to have some private time with your computer to do whatever, and it's email or something like that maybe you don't necessarily feel comfortable having, you know, 50 library patrons walking around behind you while you're doing a tax return or writing it, or, you know, looking up something, you know, it doesn't...
Or doing a job application or a housing application. Like, there's so many things now where we make the assumption that everyone has access, and even, you know, I don't know what your opinion is, but in Australia we're fairly behind in terms of the actual internet technology. Like,
we can be,
we haven't upgraded enough.
And it's honestly, it's not for lack of interest. Australians are massively into trying to adopt broadband as well as they can and as much as they can, and of course we don't necessarily have the access to super high speed broadband that maybe, say, countries like Korea and stuff do. Can we go back to the Skype thing and parents thing, for example? Because I tell you what, because I didn't want to interrupt you, but I totally want to share this with you. So one of the studies that I looked at, it's called Rise of the Silver Surfer, and it's not a comic book. It is actually, you know, obviously named after it, and it's by some researchers at DHS and Deakin University. And they actually were talking to older people about their access to computers and stuff, and it actually makes a really good point that family members are a really great source of support for that, but sometimes family members can be not so great a source of support, that sometimes, especially if you do live with the grandparents in the house or whatever, sometimes the kids will try and jump on the computer. It's like, I'll do this, rah, rah, rah.
Taking over rather than enabling.
Yeah, that's right. And sometimes there's a bit of a power sort of thing. Like, so here's an actual quote from one of the respondents to one of the interviews. She's bought herself a laptop. She wanted to get on Skype to talk to her sister. The sister has it. It's all there. But this family member, who isn't named, has not set up the Skype, so they're still texting each other, which is ridiculous. That's a quote. So, wow. I mean, you can look that up. Actually, if you look for that, Rise of the Silver Surfer, and then add social inclusion onto that just so you don't get a whole bunch of hits on superhero movies.
That's really interesting. I mean, I think about my mum, who's 83, and if I call her on Skype, she picks up the phone and says, "Oh, you're calling me on the Skype phone." And I say, "I beg your pardon." She said, "Oh, I've got one phone that's connected to Skype and the other one's a landline." And I said, "You are so..." I said, "I have no idea how to do that."
Yeah, I wouldn't know how to do that.
Good on you. Because it's sometimes the assumption that because someone's older that they also don't have, you know, internet capacity or ability, and there are some people who are actually pretty sad, have got into it and have realised, it is actually just a typewriter.
Well, something that this same study found is that for some of the older people, they don't feel like, whatever I'm doing can't possibly be as important as whatever else is going on, gaming and stuff like that, which I think is a bit of a shocker. So it sort of causes them to limit their behaviour in a really artificial way. Thinking of lots of other people, I mean, this happens to everybody. So I often do a lot of training right, for my job. So it's my job to tell people how to use this software. And it's amazing the number of people that come along and they're like, oh, computers, I don't know anything about computers. And they're really passive about it. Like if something happens, like an error happens, they'll just click it away, like get it away from me. And I'm like, oh, do you remember what the error message said? No, I just got rid of it. I don't understand. And it's like, you don't have to be scared of that. It's telling you something. It hopefully,
but it sometimes feels like a judgment. I mean, I sit there and it comes up and it says error. It's basically saying to me, this is what you did wrong, stupid.
Now, that's
how I feel. I don't know if that's the truth. But
that's another thing. And it's not work that I personally do, but it's work that you often find. So there's the concept of an idea called usability. And that sort of goes to the idea of, you know, people using software and how they use it and how they feel when they're using it. And what often comes up in studies about usability, because often if you're making something, you should be usability testing it all the time with a group of people to say, well, how do you feel about using it? Something that often comes up is, oh, this error message, it's really harsh. You know, it made me feel this way or whatever. And it's actually a really good thing to look at that and think about how you're designing your software and whether you're designing it that empowers people or whether you are designing it in such a way as it puts people off.
Hey, Amy, I think you've got some feedback then for some sort of designer of editing software because usability.
I've had a bit of a meltdown day and a half. I went to the fabulous Safe School Symposium, got some great audio, and I spent the last day and a half in vain trying to edit it with my hands that are not the most dexterous things in the world due to my lovely disability, which normally doesn't annoy me a whole lot, but at the moment it's driving me up the wall. And I just couldn't edit it. I read all the supporting documents. I read the manual. I re-downloaded the software. I reloaded it. I got chunks of it to delete, and then I couldn't get other bits to delete doing exactly the same thing.
Ugh, and frustrating.
In the end, I literally wanted to throw my computer out the window.
Well, like I said, that's why they call it Word for Windows.
But yes, which I do love. I just was immensely frustrated. So. And couldn't actually get it to function. And I just think, well, I've got decent dexterity. So people who have less than myself, you know, due to arthritis, disability, stroke, just older age, all that sort of thing, you kind of don't realize how much you need to be able to functionally access programs and use them in a way that's not frustrating, so you can actually try and do what you want to do. And I don't think companies are aware of that stuff.
It's 2014 too. Mm. So you'd think, hey, surely there's an audio version of this. You know, being able to go stop, cut, edit. You know, those sort of things. Yeah. Delete, but I couldn't even find
the delete button.
Yeah.
there may even be one, but how can you find out if it doesn't help you along?
Yeah. Exactly.
So, like, a great design pattern for this is when you see that somebody's receiving a lot of errors or something like that, is to pop and say, it looks like you're having trouble with this, and maybe offer them a bit more support.
See,
but
you just don't see
that in software.
See, that's exactly what I want in my error message. It says, it looks like you're having a problem. Yes. See, I'd admit to that. I say, yes, I am. I would love your help.
And then a help box pops up and goes, do you want this option, or this option? Perhaps this will work. Were you trying to do this, this, or this?
Yes.
And then you could actually feel like you could progress in it instead of just walking away and going, I don't know what I'm doing anymore and I hate computers and I want to cry.
Oh, yeah. Amy, they need to employ you as, you know, as user experience. That's what I want. That's absolutely what I want.
It would be good. Yeah. Although I think I want to work with Steph after the conference, because seriously, it was very, very inspiring.
You're inspired.
I enjoyed it immensely. So we'll talk about that in a moment with the lovely Steph. And now we can put another song on. So we've got Taking It to the Streets by Denny Hines and Christine Arnoux.
Great track.
You're on Joy 94.9.
Absolutely Everybody, a show for absolutely everybody on Joy 94.9.
You're on Joy 94.9. It's 28 minutes past midday. You're with Amy, Zoe, Raina and Steph. And we're having a chat about all things social inclusion and community and all sorts of things. Raina, you had something else you wanted to have a chat about?
Oh, look, God, I could talk all day, but I'm probably not going to do it all day. But, you know, during the break, and while listening to that great track, we're actually talking a little bit about social media. Because before the break, we were talking about older people and connectivity to the internet. And, of course, whenever we think about older people, we also think about relos, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
And we're all sort of having a discussion about how our own parents and grandparents and stuff maybe use social media and what an amazing tool it can be to actually get connected if you didn't have those sorts of connections before.
Yeah.
What do you think?
Well, if there's people overseas particularly, you know, that, I mean, I know my folks are, you know, one of a very small kind of collection of family, all of our family's over in Scotland. So, you know, mum and dad basically can connect overseas and they utilise Skype and, you know, they both have a computer. There's no way my mother would share her computer with dad, which I think is, it's, you know, her toy, whereas dad has he also has an iPad and she's very jealous because he's got BBC on it. but, you know, there's I guess there's some people who are really adept at using stuff and other people who, you know, maybe don't know that it's even out there or have it and can't use it.
Sure. I mean, thinking about things like voice over IP being the general sort of term for things like Skype, or there are other things as well. So Google Talk, you can do voice stuff now. And if you're on the aged pension or whatever and you've got a fixed income and it's not very high, you're probably not going to be all that interested in spending big dollars on calling overseas. So something that's relatively cheap or even free can be such an amazing eye-opener.
Yeah, well, connecting people to their community.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And I think I get excited about programs like, get excited about hearing about things like this is when you hear about programs that are doing things like taking iPads out to the community, or you know, getting people involved in not feeling so put off by their computers, I guess. And it's not just older people. I mean, there's plenty of people who can benefit from this. There's a growing, always growing sense of community around, for example, people who don't speak because maybe they're autistic or they've got some other sort of thing going on that means that they're not particularly verbal.
I was going to mention that because I know there's quite a few community organisations around that are very aware now that they can actually use things like iPads and computers as great communication tools for people who aren't verbal or who are learning how to be more verbal. And so it's a less confronting way for everyone to try and communicate, because if you are on the spectrum, then chances are you get sensory overload at some point. So if you have a room full of people telling you what to do, you're not going to cope. But if you've got one person sitting in the room with you with your iPads connected and you're doing work on your iPads and learning, you know, how to communicate in a way that makes you feel comfortable, that's amazing. And that wouldn't have happened even 5 years ago.
Yeah, exactly. And there's apps for like the National Relay Service now, you know, where you can actually, similar to the National Relay, where you can actually click on it and do that communication through an iPad. How awesome is that?
Yeah, and it's just amazing the kind of accessibility elements of programs can really allow lots of people to become connected in ways that wasn't possible before. And I think, you know, we can get very cynical about things, but I think it's important to focus on some of the really positive stuff that a lot of people are doing, because there's amazing work going on in the community.
I'm glad you mentioned learning and using technology for that, because one of the other things I wanted to talk about, which I think is a really exciting development, I mean, it could go either way. It could be really horrible or it could be really great, is the rise of the massive online learning. So the MOOCs, they call them. So massively online something courses. I'm sorry, I can't remember what the other O is in there. But what's really amazing about that is that it's all delivered as lectures or audio, or maybe, you know, things that you can read, and you can do that in your own computer, etc. And it gives you so much access to courses and things like that maybe you would have to pay a lot for, or maybe that you wouldn't necessarily feel okay to do in a classroom environment. Because again, if you're if you find that you know, a busy classroom is a sensory overload sort of situation for you, then maybe doing it on your own in a computer is a better way to do it. And it means that you can pause things, you can go back to them, you can, you know, basically take your time with it. And a lot of them are actually accredited. So you can get real live accreditation from an actual university.
Yeah, that's great.
Doing some of these short courses, which
that's
I think is fabulous. Fantastic.
And that would annoy a lot of people in the education sector, I would say, but I think it's a great advancement.
Yeah, well,
and
I mean,
a great way to get people in the door.
Exactly, exactly. And a wonderful way to reach learners that maybe you wouldn't normally be able to do. So, I mean, I work in that sector myself, so and I know that we're really excited about being able to offer more to people who are further away.
And and let's face it, too, as education becomes more expensive, and it doesn't look like it's getting any cheaper,
no, kids, tell you what.
That why should education just be the bastion of those who can afford it? You know, shouldn't everyone have access to information to
you're
make
right.
their life better?
Now, the counter to that is that often when you are learning, it is better to have contact with a real person.
Sure.
And it's not necessarily a substitute for having programs in a higher education environment, or even in a school's environment, to accommodate people or to make things, you know, and it's not even just making room, but actually sometimes you need to change things up quite a lot to include more people. Mm. And I think one of the criticisms about online learning or MOOCs in particular is that some universities and some colleges and stuff are going, oh, great, so we'll just shove all that stuff out and let them mind their own business because you've got to buy your own computer and do that.
Yeah, right.
So there can still be a bit of a divide there, but and again, being the cynical person that I am, sometimes I think that may happen, and but hopefully it doesn't.
Yeah, and having crumbs isn't the same as sitting at the table.
Exactly. You know? That is such
a
great way.
Yes, that's a good analogy. It's very true. And, you know, I think there's some great work going on out there, and we need to, you know, try and be positive as much as we can because...
Yeah,
you know, life's hard enough without making it harder.
So maybe the MOOCs are actually like the gateway drug to education and information.
Yeah. Imagine
beginning of the drip.
Yeah, exactly.
on that note, the next song is "Same Love" by the fabulous Macklemore and Ryan Lewis. You're on Joy 94.9. It's 24 minutes to one.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ community radio station Joy 94.9.
This is Absolutely Everybody on Joy 94.9, proudly sponsored by Anecto.
You're on Joy 94.9, it's 18 minutes to 1, and you're with Amy, Zoe, Rainer and Steph, and we just heard Steph then, briefly. And Steph, I want to have a chat with you about the fabulous Save Schools Symposium that happened last Friday.
Yeah, so we had the National Safe School Symposium on Friday, and we had over 300 people come along, which was really, really exciting. We had people come from every state and territory, lots of students, teachers, service providers work with young people. Penny Wong was there, Parliamentary Secretary Scott Ryan, the Human Rights Commissioner Tim Wilson. So it was
a star-studded lineup.
We had lots of great speakers, young
Clem
people.
Clem Newton-Brown, I think he was there as well, and a couple of other dignitaries. Mm. I was very inspired by the fact that there was so much bipartisan support and everyone sort of realised how important the program is and put aside the usual, you know, differences and said, this is important, we need to do this for the future of our kids' mental health and education. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, absolutely. That's something that's been, really exciting to have that bipartisan support. So it was the launch of Safe Schools Coalition Australia, which is now launched nationally. Very exciting. And that's funded by the Australian government through the Department of Education. That's really great that they're continuing to support us. And, we had people there from the ALP and the Liberal Party and the Greens as well. So as you say, it's really nice that everyone is uniting over this issue in terms of making schools safer, and the Australian government has been really clear that this is part of their anti-bullying agenda, and it's I guess very, very mainstream in a good way, I suppose. That's not always something I would strive towards, but in this case I think it's really good that everyone's taking it so seriously and recognises it as an important issue. And the Human Rights Commissioner was saying that the Australian government has asked him to particularly focus on this area as a priority for the government. So that's pretty exciting.
Yeah, and it's pretty inspiring.
That's awesome. And the timing's perfect because the UNHCR, the United Nations, have actually got they're reviewing the stuff around human rights, gender and sexuality, and calling upon the world leaders to agree and sign up to a lack of discrimination and to reduce and get rid of inequity across all laws around the world. So if there's a great commitment by the Commonwealth government to say bullying is not okay, the bullying of any person is not okay, then if we can take it to a national level and then international, hey people, there might be some movement.
Something else I was quite glad about was this, you know, because we had a lot of stories by young people there on the day, and one thing that came through really clearly was, I suppose, the resilience of young people and the commitment of students and teachers to make things better. But something else that was also quite clear was that it is still an issue, and I think sometimes there's a misconception. Maybe I live in Brunswick, so particularly in the inner city, I think, of people going, oh, it's fine, you know, no one's homophobic, you know, around
here. We've got modern family.
And
that's the thing. And, okay, yes, maybe Brunswick is fine, but it is also the case that there are a lot of kids who do continue to get bullied. So, yeah, we do need to make things safer for them and keep working at it and not become complacent. Yeah. And it really does need to be a focused issue. It's not necessarily just going to be addressed with generic anti-bullying policies, but naming the issue so that it can then be directly improved, I think, is something that's really important.
Mm, and that's one of the things that I noticed during the day listening to all the speeches was how important it was to actually address the difference and not just gloss over it and not just say, oh, well, you're same-sex attracted or you're trans or you're bi or whatever, and not actually give people a bit of education around, you know, sex education or relationships or families when you're talking about having, you know, Father Sunday or whatever. Can you have parent day instead? Like if you have same-sex parents or a single parent or grandparents or anything. Like it was about trying to be inclusive of the difference.
Because I think something that a lot of teachers say, or and service providers as well, say, oh, you know, it's fine, we treat everyone the same. And often they mean that in a positive way, but we, I guess, need to move beyond that. That sometimes saying, oh, we treat everyone the same means, yeah, not recognising that, yeah, people do have different needs. And if you're taking that approach with, say, as you say, sex education, you can't just treat everyone the same because not everyone is going to have the same experiences and needs. And, yeah, again, when you're saying something for Father's Day, not everyone does have a father. So if you do really want to treat everyone in the same, in the sense of giving everyone equal opportunity, you do need to actively think about
treating them differently.
Yeah,
and that often makes people a bit uncomfortable and makes them feel like they're actually doing the wrong thing. And I think we need to kind of change the thinking around a bit and make it okay to talk about difference and have a class that doesn't assume that everyone's heterosexual and all of that.
Yeah. And it's interesting, isn't it? Because instinctively we all know that no child learns, that all children learn differently. You know, that there are different ways of learning. Some are kinesthetic, have to touch things, and some others like story, others need to read and read for a while. Some are good with numbers, some are good with, you know. So we know instinctively that that not one size fits all. You know, if you were to say, right, one size fits all, everyone's going to have to do A, B and C and that's what they get in life, people would find that quite atrocious. So it kind of, you'd think it would transfer, and maybe where the schools are is the perfect ground for it to happen, because there is that understanding that if you want to treat me the same, then treat me differently so I can have equal access.
And something that's come through pretty clearly in the research and also in the anecdotal stories is that kids need to feel safe to be able to learn. And I think we see it most clearly in examples of gender diverse or transgender students on that time when they do transition or have their gender recognised by the school community, that, you know, parents and teachers and classmates go, oh my God, this kid's really good at singing and maths and all these things that they previously, you know, weren't able to engage with because they were so focused on, you know, feeling stressed and just not able to relax and express themselves and, yeah, be who they really are.
Yeah. Yeah, there's some wonderful stories out there, particularly YouTube-wise. There's 2007 Harvey Milk Day in the US, and there's a wonderful presentation by an 8-year-old boy who thanks his parents for recognising his transgender condition and that, and treating him like, you know, the boy that he had identified at the age of 4 to be, and the whole school community were able to embrace him. But that isn't always the case. Sometimes people have to change states or change communities to actually give that child what they need. So I think it's brilliant that the Safe Schools Coalition. I know Amy was saying this morning, you said, well, that's it.
Yeah,
you know,
I was like, I want to work for you guys. It was amazing. Yeah. I was so pumped. I was exhausted, and which made me think you guys must have been even more exhausted because it was an epic effort to get such a great day going with the amount of, you know, work and education that went into not only the people that spoke but the workshops during the day, which I went to one of the transgender workshops, and it was great. It was informative and open, and everyone was learning and, you know, it was safe. Like, some of the teachers weren't very confident about things and didn't understand some of the concepts, but they were safe enough to actually say that and say, what do you mean? Why is it important that we have unisex toilets?
Yeah.
Like, yeah, good, you know, we had a big discussion about toilets and how that excludes people.
It's always the toilets,
and
isn't it?
Yeah, it was odd in that sense. But, yeah, it was just really inspiring, so... Great work, Steph.
What's the website people can go to get more information about the conference if people like me didn't get there but would like to know a bit more?
Well, so the conference was to launch Safe Schools Coalition Australia. So you can go to safeschoolscoalition.org.au and get more information. There's lots of resources on there. There's booklets, there's posters. If you can see if your school is a member, and if your school is not a member, then you can get some information about signing up. And so, yeah, we're now launched in Victoria, South Australia and New South Wales. So if you're in one of those states, you can sign up straight away. If you're not, then we will be coming to your state very soon, but you can still absolutely give us a call, use the resources, and we can help out anyone regardless of what school you're in. And it's not just for government schools, it's for faith-based schools and independent schools as well. So everyone's invited.
Fabulous.
Absolutely everybody.
Yes. Thank you, Steph. Awesome segue. And we'll post all those links on the website. And you're listening to Joy. It's 9:01. I'm not sure.
If you want to call in or if you want to put in a comment, you can on 0427 joy949 or email onair@joy.org.au about anything that you've heard or a comment that you might have. And as well, some of you might have thought you missed out on Radiothon. You didn't. In fact, Martin has just taken up his membership and pledged $28 extra to the organisation. Thank you. We love you, Mark.
You.
You've got till 5 p.m. June the 30th. You can still ring that number or email through and become a member. You go to joy.org.au and you can sign up there.
And next we have Macmore and Lewis with The Same Love, which actually wasn't earlier. Earlier was Delta Goodrum. yes, and that was a great song too. But now we have the right song with The Same Love. You're on Joy 94.9.
Absolutely everybody, every Wednesday from noon on Joy 94.9.
You're on Joy 94.9. You're with Amy, Zoe, Raina and Steph, and it's been a fabulous show today. And we've got right to the end. So a big thank you to everyone involved and a huge thank you to Zoe for coming on board these last couple of weeks. It's been great fun. And appreciate it.
Thanks for letting me play.
No worries. And thanks to Mark for pushing all the buttons and dials. He saved me a lot of angst. And next week we have Jody back on board and we'll be talking about all things singing. Ooh. I think we've actually got a choir coming in, or we're talking to them on the phone. So I think we'll have a lot of singing next week and more great stuff coming up on the show. So stay tuned, have a great week, and let us know what you think. You're on Joy 94.9. It's 1 o'clock.
Joy 94.9 presents Absolutely Everybody, sponsored by and presented by Enecto, the People Network. Absolutely Everybody. Absolutely Everybody, only on Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9.
This podcast was produced by Joy Media. You can support Joy's diverse sound and diverse community this June by donating to Joy Radiothon 2024. Go to joy.org.au/radiothon. And remember, we all flourish with joy.